Hey guys, welcome to Overcrest. So glad to have you back. I'm Chris.
And I'm Jake.
And it's really great to be back. I'm really excited about today's show because we had a two-week, well, not quite 2 weeks, but I was gone on vacation and the last two episodes were pre-recorded.
Right. We had
everything's pre-recorded, but
hiatus.
Yeah.
And those two were from a previous recording. They weren't that week.
We recorded them ahead of time just so we didn't want you guys to be lonely.
Exactly.
And so we wanted you to feel like we were here for you in your time of boredom and need of our voices.
So we're back at it.
We're back.
We've got a lot to talk about.
I missed it. And I wish, I'm almost like, well, maybe we could make this one longer. But I really want to try and stick to the format and kind of keep things on
the
straight now.
We're not that entertaining, Chris.
No, probably not. Probably not. But there's been a lot of dumb shit that has gone on in the last.
Yeah, and that really is it.
In the last couple of weeks.
Two or three weeks. There's been some news stories that have come about that we'll talk about. And yeah, lots to talk about.
So is anything new with you guys with your cars? What's the story?
Car related.
Surely
nothing.
Something's happened in the last 2 weeks. You know what we didn't talk about yet? And what's I want to hear that? This is I want to hear. I heard this via text message from you, but I didn't hear the story of the car wash.
Yeah.
So this isn't on the
this
show
isn't on
notes
the list.
Here.
I actually totally forgot about this, but this was something where I just had to text Chris in the middle of the
you
day.
You called me.
Oh yeah, I called you. That's
like,
right.
You're like,
I was
what
nervous.
Do?
So what was it? It was either one of the really cold days I remember it was the middle of the blizzard.
Okay.
So we had a
blizzard?
Huge. Yes.
Come on.
We had a blizzard. We got all of like 3 inches.
Okay.
No, so we had a really cold spell.
There's
here
a joke
like
in
a
there
week.
Somewhere about you thinking 3 inches is a blizzard.
Well, it seemed like a blizzard. It was whiteout conditions. How about that?
Okay.
It didn't amount to much, but it was whiteout conditions. So yeah, we had like a big big cold snap for like a week. So no one can wash their cars when it's under zero. So
yeah, we've been through that. Yeah.
And then it got warm for a day, and I was gonna wash my car, but all the all the lines were like 30 people deep. And we've talked about this before. It's like, I don't know if people just don't realize how long they're going to be sitting in line.
Yep.
If they don't care, or they get in line and then they're stuck because there's people behind them. But anyway, so I wasn't going to sit in line. So finally, it was snowing. It was like whiteout conditions one afternoon. I was like, you know what? Screw it. I still got to get the salt off my truck.
That was the time you chose?
So that's when I was like, I'm here getting gas. I'm going to just go through the car wash. There's no one here.
If I would have seen you do that in my head, I probably would have taken a picture of the dumbass getting his car washed
in the
blizzard.
Well, that plays into the story. So I'm like, I know this is stupid, but my truck is full of salt and everything else. So I want to at least get it clean. And I was close to home.
In Minnesota,
so
we call that clean-ish.
Clean-ish. Yeah, I wanted to get it clean-ish. As clean as it could be in the middle of a snowstorm. So I'm in the car wash, and it like starts up, everything's spinning. It's not the touchless, so it has the big rotating brush things.
Yep.
And we could talk about that, too. I'm not a big snob as far as like worrying about your paint with those brushes. I know some people are like, do not go to these car washes.
I will not.
You will not?
I will not. They scratch your car. They absolutely do. Think of the line all the way to the gas pumps.
No, I know.
All day, every day, with all that salt and road grime sticking to those things.
So what's worse, not ever washing your car or going through
one of those? I would rather not wash my car than go through one of
those.
Really? Because that salt and that stuff is just sitting on the surface, which really isn't doing anything.
Yeah,
but
it attracts all the moisture and is a catalyst for rust.
Only if you park your car inside. If you keep your car
outside,
that is a rust factory. You know, I purposely leave my car
outside.
So that's
because
it's
warm, get salty and wet. It warms and thaws. So now instead of just ice, you have water.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
That's what happens to ice when it's warm.
It turns into water. Physics 101.
Right, and that's what causes rust to happen. So
yeah, but your car's going to thaw out in like the sunshine, too.
No,
anyways.
The things that rust aren't in the sunshine.
True.
They're underneath the car. Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, so yeah, I'm getting a car wash in the snowstorm, and the big spinning brushes are going, and all of a sudden
scratching.
I hear, they're scratching, and all of a sudden you hear a big clunk, and like the lights turn red. And no, they're still spinning, but they're not moving. Like, you know how the whole unit is supposed to move back and forth on its tracks?
Yeah.
And so it's sitting there spinning right by my door, and it's just stuck. And I look in my rearview mirror, and I can see the ones that are behind me is, like, off kilter a little bit and not spinning anymore. And that's when I was like, oh, shit, I broke the car wash. So what I learned after
So then you called me.
I was like, well, the problem is I was like, at some point it has to stop spinning and I can leave. But there was one in front of me and one right at the door, so I can't get out. And I was like, I'm literally stuck here. Like, I called you just kind of as a funny story, but my next call was going to be to the gas station attendant and be
help.
Like, can you shut this off, please?
Help,
I'm stuck. Yeah. So finally,
there's
after,
someone out
like,
there that has a phobia of this.
Oh,
like,
I'm
in
sure.
the car wash it breaking
down.
Yeah, this
is their worst nightmare.
Yeah, you lived it.
Basically. So after probably, I mean, it seemed like it was a good 60 seconds of just being stuck there thinking, well, now what? In other news, my door panel got really clean or scratched up.
Yeah, I bet
right
it did. Yeah, there's like micrometers of less clear coat on that door.
Right,
now.
Exactly. Yeah. So finally it like stopped and the arms retracted and I drove forward and out of the car wash because the door opened and I saw that the back brush had like twisted itself around my toe hitch that I had mentioned previously. This crazy abomination.
Have we posted a picture
of
your toe hitch yet? We need to get that toe hitch posted up.
We should do that.
Yeah.
So anyways, it like one of the brush strands basically looped itself around there and hooked on it and it ripped the brush off of its bracket. And so I pull out and I was like, oh shit. So I had a couple things run through my mind.
Did you go tell them? Or were you like, hey guys?
No, because here's the thing. At first I was like, well, I just got screwed out of like an $8 car wash. So I was going to go tell them that A, I want my money back. And B, oh, by the way, I broke your car wash. But then I'm thinking, I'm the idiot getting his car wash in the middle of a snowstorm. So that's embarrassing because no one would get that. And B, I broke their car wash.
Yeah.
And there is something posted when you go in there, like any property damage, like is your fault, like on your vehicle. And I was like, I wonder if they would try to put this on me as well.
Probably. I doubt they would have done
that. I doubt they would have too. But I was like, you know what? I'm just going to cut my losses here and drive away.
So with a half clean truck.
Not even half. Yeah.
It's just really clean doors.
Really clean doors. And everything else is salty and wet and soapy because I think it was soapy too.
Yeah. So I have like so I drove down to Milwaukee in the wagon, and I typically get about 40 miles per gallon
in the diesel.
In the diesel at 80 miles an hour. I got 42 with the roof box on.
So you're more aerodynamic.
I was more
with a giant box on the top of your roof.
However, when I came back, I only got 38.
Could that be wind? Did you have like a
I was
super
thinking, like I started I started I started checking like the elevation difference between like
you're
Minneapolis
just
and Milwaukee.
Down. I don't think it's that strong.
I know, but I was like, what is causing this? This is ridiculous. But I couldn't really account for it, so I assumed I just had a tailwind.
There had to have been
the
a
way
huge
there.
Tailwind, and it was just a sail like pushing you along.
I don't. Well, it is a wedge. Like you
can
see,
but
like
if it's
this
a tailwind, then the back would have been
right. But you can see this weird, like because I have so much salt. There was so much salt on this car that a cow or a deer could have walked up and just licked the thing. There was crust, like actual physical crust that you could touch with your fingernail.
Yeah,
and it would break
off
like mineral deposits.
Yes,
on that.
Exactly.
I mean,
it
was so disgusting. It was so bad. I did get it washed at like 11 o'clock last night because I didn't want to.
Was it in the middle of a snowstorm?
No, there's no snow. But yeah, I got extra gas mileage. That was kind of cool. I couldn't figure out.
I thought you were
going to
say like with the salt, you could see like the aerodynamic streak.
That's what
marks,
I was
going
to say. Yeah,
right?
I could see like the way that it came over to the roof box. And it almost, I mean.
It's like the old school aerodynamic. Sometimes you'll see the photos where they put little like ribbon.
Yeah, the little ribbon deals.
On them in sailing, you call them telltales. So you can see where the wind is flowing.
Well, that's what they would do with like the little models. They'd make little tiny models
the clay
of the cars,
models
and then like blow at them or whatever. I never understood how that would work because I just don't feel like the air density is going to work over a small scale model
you would
versus.
I think it'd be different. It
maybe they
scale correctly.
I guess it's a lot cheaper to make a tiny one than any other ones. But it did. It snowed down there for probably 4 days.
Oh, really?
There was at least a little bit, a foot, maybe a foot of snow down there.
And this is down in Milwaukee.
Yeah, and I was so depressed because it was so boring. The front-wheel drive car was so boring.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
My daughter's like, do some donuts, because we've done donuts in the truck. And she's like, do some donuts, do some skids, drift.
Does that have a handbrake even?
It does.
Okay.
But the traction control cannot be turned all the way off.
Oh, that's right.
But it doesn't work in reverse. The traction control doesn't do
so
anything.
So you're
in reverse.
Going in reverse.
So I'm doing donuts in reverse, which is all you can do in a front wheel drive car anyway.
I suppose.
So I was doing a bunch of J turns, you know, just throwing it in drive as I whipped around. That's about all you can do. It was really kind of sad. And then because I've been doing all these e-brake turns, my wheels were packed with snow. So like 60 miles an hour, it was
shaking.
Really doing like this. So then I had to get under there with like a stick and it was ice and I'm like hacking all this stuff out.
That's an interesting phenomenon because it gets packed with snow and then your brake rotors actually heat up. Like, I'm curious if people know how hot your brake rotors actually get.
They probably have no
idea.
And how
much heat they radiate out. Because then basically all the snow that's in your wheels turns into just a super hard ice.
Yeah, it was
awful. All that weight
So I mean, yeah, I was chipping away at it and just everything else. And you know, it was just, so it sucked.
Not fun.
So overall, it was a very salty, boring car road trip. Well, nothing happened. Nothing broke.
Wisconsin isn't the most thrilling drive either, from what I recall.
It's fine. I've driven it so many times. I used to live down there.
Yeah.
So I drove back and forth from there. I've done it hundreds of times.
Just 94 the whole way.
Yeah. Anyway, what else we got?
Well, nothing too much as far as what's going on with us. I'm getting some new wheels for the Audi, the RS4, that I'll talk about at a later date.
From
BBS.
Okay. Well, that's not a bad choice.
Yeah.
I thought, just as long as you don't say from some, I don't know, I don't want to start tearing it in.
Some of the bad wheel choices out there. In case they want to be a sponsor.
So one of the things that I did when I was down there is I watched this show. It was Dirty Money.
Yes.
And which is on Netflix. And my wife ran downstairs at the rental Airbnb that we had. She's like, Chris, you got to watch the show. I could only watch it for 5 minutes, and I wanted to rip the TV off the wall. So I can only imagine what you're going to be like when you watch
it. I like how your wife pulls you aside to be like, you're going to hate this. Come hate this with me. It's like the couple that hates together stays together.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Absolutely. But she wanted to see my reaction. So I turn it on, and it starts out, and it's just this dude who got so excited that he was listening to the news about Dieselgate, okay, and he was listening to NPR, and they said his name, like, this guy should make a documentary. And he was so excited to hear his name that he just had to do it.
So this guy's a documentarian.
He's a documentarian, and NPR was like, what we really need is Mr. Jerkoff, Bob, to make a documentary about this. It'd be really great. And it was probably one of the worst. I mean, it was well done. So the documentary was well done. It was well put together. It was well produced. Voiceovers were great. There was a lot of historical footage, lots of commercials, lots of interviews with past executives and stuff like that. But it was absolute shit.
So it was
shit? The first 5 minutes, so he had one, and he's like, oh, I really love.
He had one of these Volkswagens.
This is a direct quote from somewhere that in the movie that he said, but I think it was in the beginning when he's like, I was really happy with my TDI till it became a killing machine. And I'm just like, come on, dude.
So just to clarify.
And then it went to, let's talk about some of the history of how we got here. And it's immediately Hitler. Like, it was like they went straight to Hitler.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
And they did it a couple of times. And then from Hitler, they went right into Trump at the end. And it was just like, you know, I'm not a big Trump.
Are you telling me there's like a little bit of a political agenda with the show, Chris?
There was incredible political agenda. And it's, you know, I don't mind political leanings because I like hearing both sides. I think it's important
you get fired up about it.
Sure, absolutely. But I like to hear both sides. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to watch it. But this was so far beyond. I mean, the guy was like, fuck Volkswagen. I mean, it was like out of this world. And there's this one scene where the guy grabs an engine, or they're like, well, you know, we've got to worry about the jobs, because they went on and on about how in Germany the manufacturers there's some loopholes that if defeat devices are okay, as long as it's because not having the defeat device would damage the engine. So that's the loophole in Germany and the European Union.
Interesting.
That allows them to have that defeat device, and it's not illegal there. It is here. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So because they measure.
I'm going to interject just to give some context here. What we're talking about is this was two years ago? This all came out.
Yeah,
Volkswagen,
2015.
It was found
beginning of 2015
on their TDI, their diesel engines. They basically had such good fuel economy and power ratings. But what happened, the reason they were able to get to that.
In hindsight, it was too good to be true.
Yeah,
really?
I suppose it was.
But
what happened is when the EPA and these testing agencies were testing the vehicle,
They were trying to test it because they were trying to figure out why it's so good.
Oh, really?
They weren't covered it? Yeah, they weren't being. So it was a third party company.
Yep.
And they were trying to figure out why it was so good, how Volkswagen was doing it.
It was actually, I believe, a university was looking into it.
Partially, yes. Yeah. So it was a private company first, and then it was like
not-for-profit. How these Volkswagen engines were so efficient. And what they basically found out is that the software in the car was able to detect when it was being tested.
It was when it was being driven without any steering wheel input.
Oh, is that what it used?
That's what it was. So when you're on the dyno, you don't touch the steering wheel. You're just accelerating, decelerating, which doesn't happen in the real world.
Yeah.
So as soon as you're accelerating without any steering wheel input at all,
then
it turns on the defeat.
It swaps
over to the other map.
So it was much less, there was much more fumes being.
Yeah, the NOx is what they were concerned about. It's like 40 or 50 times the legal limit.
yeah,
set by the government.
EPA. But in doing that, they made it much more fuel efficient and powerful.
Right, right. So anyway, back to my train of thought is that so then there was another company in Germany that wanted to measure this stuff. They're like, well, is anybody other than Volkswagen doing it?
Yeah.
And the guy was denied by any test facility in Germany. Nobody would help him test. No one. Really? So what he had to go to like Switzerland to test like Mercedes and BMW. And
So this is all part of the documentary.
Yeah, this is part of the documentary. That's where I learned this. I've read some other stuff about it before. But all these other companies, it's the same thing. At least in Germany, it's the same. Like it's just vastly different than what's on paper. And what they did is the reason that they do it, they said it's because of the jobs. And the number one thing that bothered me in this documentary is it says, oh, it's all for the jobs. And then the narrator goes, but would you want that job if you were making products that kill people? And I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. It was just so, like, if he would have left stuff like that out, it would have been enjoyable to watch.
Yeah,
it would have been. But it was just almost just like he was trying to adjudicate it. Like,
yeah.
In this documentary, he was trying to further. I mean, these guys got fined billions of dollars.
They
lost all the money to their customers. And I don't think that number's ever been released. How many were bought back?
Yeah, that's right. Because besides just the fine, they also had to buy back all these vehicles.
Right. And so if you owned a car for 3 years, you got your full money back.
Wow.
They bought the car back from you. And you drove a car for free for 3 years, which leads me to be like, who is actually mad? Who was mad? Because this guy's wife was apparently really upset and felt deceived and angry and just, but who cares? You got to drive a car for free for 3 years,
right?
Even though it was a killing machine.
I don't know. What's the demographic that purchased these TDIs? Do you think
I bought one?
No, I know. I think I'm curious about it.
I think it's just probably, my guess is it's 30 to 50 year olds, you know, maybe dinks. I don't know. Dual income, no kids.
Right.
You know, kind of just like they wanted to be. Maybe they would have bought a Prius otherwise.
That's what I was wondering.
I'm not sure. You know, Volkswagen has
really
always been fun.
Eco warrior type people that are buying them.
I don't.
That would be so upset about this finding.
You know what I think happened is, so Volkswagen was trying to do this. excuse me. So Volkswagen was trying to do this diesel technology for a long time.
Right.
Since the, you know, the late 70s, early 80s, and then they got into the Mark III, and they did it in the Mark IV.
Yeah, they've
and
the, had it for the
They were trying time. To dominate this market. This is the market. They're like, this is how we're going to do it. We're going to become the biggest manufacturer in the world by doing this. So they had decades of time, money,
resources
and resources and personal capital invested in making this happen.
So they can't.
And then the EPA and CARB, the California Air Resources Board, came in and was like, well, actually, yeah, we're not going to be doing diesels anymore. And if they do exist, they have to be this. So basically what happens is regulation came in and just fucked them. Just fucked them. And they almost had no choice but to try. They had to in my head, that's what they were thinking. Like, we got to try something. We've got all these cars. They've already been manufactured. We've already got these contracts with these companies to build these parts and build the engines or build the modules. Because Volkswagen doesn't make everything for those cars. So they buy stuff from Bosch, let's say.
Yep.
And they get contracts with these companies. And, you know, they've got contracts with the unions and their employees and shipping. I mean, it's like there's so many cogs in this thing that people don't think about. And when the EPA, even if they say in 5 years from now or 10 years from now, these companies are looking a lot farther down the road from that, and they're making these plans. And I'm not saying that it was right for them to do it, because it wasn't. It was.
I was going to just try to kind of counter you there and say, you know, when it came down to it, yes, there's so many other stakeholders involved in the process of building a car and everything else. But when it came down to it, I mean, really, they're just looking at the bottom line.
Yes.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's their job.
Right.
Their job is to look at the bottom line, but their job is to do it without lying.
Yes.
And I think what really bothers me is the hyperbole of this, of the killing machine. They're killing people and everything else. It's like they're going to war with Volkswagen for killing people. And it's just like the guy brought up his daughter that had an asthma attack at her soccer practice and blamed it on Volkswagen.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's like you're really taking this too far. Well, and you posted that little clip from the documentary on Facebook, and I had to laugh at it too. And someone commented, like, it sounds like he's talking about, like, you know, a an assault rifle factory. And then you could see people getting, I don't know, not even upset about it, but saying, okay, yeah, these are machines that are built to kill people. But the fact you're applying that label to a car, a Volkswagen, it was just, yeah, pretty ridiculous. So that was this documentary that you watched.
It was just frustrating. And yeah. I know that just recently in the news, and I was going to read some of this, but we went on so long about the documentary that I'm not going to. But check it out if you want to be angry or if you want
to. Do we want to tell what the documentary
is? Yeah, it's Dirty Money.
Dirty Money,
the first, it's a series, so there's a bunch of different things that they talk about.
So it's the same producer that does different.
I didn't watch any other ones.
Okay. But I assume there's different episodes about
different
other
things. Yep. So episode one is about Volkswagen. That's the hook.
Okay.
And in the film, you actually see them studying diesel particulates on monkeys.
Right. So that's a story here that kind of came out recently. As far as I know, this was a recent kind of news break, is that Volkswagen was testing these diesel exhausts on monkeys. And I think you have the story there, but from what I remember reading of it, they basically locked all these monkeys in the room with a Volkswagen diesel Beetle.
Right.
And they basically were affecting how the fumes and these exhaust particulates, you know, affected the health of these monkeys.
Right. And people are freaking out.
Yeah. I mean, you sent the link to me a couple weeks ago, and my reaction was kind of like, wow, what the fuck? Like, it's so kind of jarring or weird to think about.
It honestly doesn't really bother me.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
How else do you figure out what this stuff is going to do? I mean, our next article is pretty damning on people that would complain about this. But how else are you going to find how this stuff actually reacts with biological cells and what it does to an actual person without speculating that it might do this or might do that? I mean, these were non-lethal tests. They released the monkeys afterward. I mean, they didn't.
Were there any long-term effects?
So they just did blood tests on them, and they just, I don't know if there was, I'm sure there was. I mean,
the headline and the concept seems, like I said, jarring and like, well, that's animal cruelty and what the fuck. Maybe the big sticking point is like they obviously weren't willing participants. They didn't know what was going on.
Well,
regardless, that's
because it's a monkey. That's right. That's why you use a monkey.
Well,
the thing is that originally.
Yeah.
And this was in the documentary. It's fucking creepy. They were planning on having a human being ride an exercise bike in the room instead.
Wow.
And I guess that didn't work out.
Yeah, I could see some litigation.
Which is almost as bad as what the EPA did a few years ago. And you've got that one in front of you. And I only pulled this up because I just wanted to get out there just the double standard.
Yeah, this is bad. So a suit filed in federal court charges the EPA with conducting.
And this is 2015, I think.
I don't see the date.
I think it's a couple years ago. So this had to be dug for a little bit.
In a 2011 commentary published in the New England Journal of Medicine.
Okay.
So basically what they did is they did potentially lethal experiments on hundreds of, quote, financially needy people who were paid $12 an hour without informing them, A, of what's going on. And let me get to the meat of it here. They were exposed to very high levels of toxic air pollutants.
Including diesel particulates.
But here's another thing. Many of these subjects were already health impaired, suffering from asthma, metabolic syndrome, and aging. Well, aging, I guess, is being impaired. But so not only were these like willing participants that knew what they were doing, they were like, let's face it, poor people who didn't have any other income were paid shit money to sit in a room not knowing what they were doing.
By the EPA.
This was the Environmental Protection Agency of the United States of America.
Doing the same thing that Volkswagen did to monkeys.
To monkeys, yes.
So what's worse?
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely the EPA here.
Just to play devil's advocate here, how do we really find out what this stuff does to people without testing somehow? I think the monkeys are probably a better choice.
It is. Anyway. That's why they use them in labs for, you know, testing new medication and everything else. So I guess when you think about it in that regard, you know, it's a medical experiment is really what it is. But when you bring in people and pay them not knowing what they're doing, that's terrible.
So to clamp it all down and just tie it all up, Volkswagen has now become the biggest auto manufacturer in the world. Now, I believe.
They have become?
Yeah.
Since when?
Since then. That was their goal.
Right.
But now that they are, I think.
Okay.
I'm 99% sure.
So you're saying despite all this?
Despite all this, it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, whatever.
Well, and it also tells, there's there's a lot of dirty shit going on.
Oh, yeah.
Involved.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's not, Volkswagen is not the only company that's ever cheated. If you go back and look at the history of defeat devices, it's happened a lot.
Really?
With carb requirements, everything else. It's happened a lot. You know, if you
that's an interesting thought.
Yeah. It's many companies.
I thought we were basically just at the point where we have the technology where we can say we can deliver, you know, all this performance. But when we realize it's being tested, you know, only now would we have the technology to defeat that.
It's happened a lot in the past.
Hmm.
I wish I had. I'll see if I can put something.
Yeah,
there.
I'd be curious to see that. So anyway, speaking of shitty things, let's talk about something else that's shitty out in the marketplace.
So I'll read this and then I'll tell you what I think of it afterward. This was from, I pulled this from my buddies over at Jalopnik. For years, we've heard criticism about Tesla's fit and finish, but now Sandy Munro, CEO of a Detroit area consultancy that tears apart and studies automobiles, has seen a Model 3 up close. So basically,
Tesla Model 3.
Yeah. So what I think these companies do is they get contracted by someone to, like maybe it's Consumer Reports, maybe it's Ford, whatever, and they just basically go over the car with a fine-tooth comb, take it apart bit by bit.
It's a third party that goes through, they're a third-party engineering firm. They're engineers that go through these new cars and, basically just analyze them.
Yep. So this Munro guy seems especially frustrated by the fit and finish. He mentions the front doors, whose handles are too difficult to open. And so what the thing is, the guy's like, yeah, I injured my hand a while ago, and I can't open this door handle with one hand. I have to use two hands. I watched the video. I'm like, come on.
Oh, there was a video.
Yeah, so this is based on a video.
Okay.
So he shows him like he has to use two hands to open it, which is, so that's how it starts out. So I was kind of like,
Now I'm skeptical.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, come on, guy. So he's like, yeah, I injured my hand and it's a little difficult for me to open. He mentions the front doors whose handles are too difficult to open and whose glass seems to just bounce around inside the panel. As you can see in the image below, which is just it's just a picture of the little felt trim on the car.
Sure.
You know, that goes the weather stripping.
Okay.
They glued on an additional weather stripping.
I did see this.
Which is kind of hokey shit, right? I mean.
Yeah. So from what I read, basically they had the weather stripping on the door window.
Yeah.
And it didn't fit properly. So they just glued another one on top. And who knows if that was unique to that model? Like that's came down the assembly line. They're like, oh, this doesn't work. All right, Jim, just put another strip on it. Is that going to be on all of them?
It wasn't on the other door.
So it was literally just at the end, shit, they're like, oh, this doesn't match. Fit, rather than adjusting the door.
You're
going
to love this quote.
I want you to
so listen to this. The guy says, the gaps on this car are like, you can see them from Mars. And I'm just wondering if we can see the panel gaps from here on the one they already sent into space.
Yeah, we'll mention that. Well, we can mention it now. If you don't know, Elon Musk's company SpaceX, which is Elon Musk also owns Tesla or started Tesla, he launched his original Tesla Roadster, his personal car for what it's worth, on the top of the first ever live test of their
rocket.
It's the
the Heavy.
Not the Atlas Heavy.
It's the Heavy something.
It's the Heavy, but what is
Heavy
it
whatever. I don't know.
It's their biggest rocket.
It was cool.
Done. So yeah, they literally launched his personal car into space
with a mannequin in it, and it's sent to orbit the sun.
And everyone's asking why, like for what? And he's like, for reasons, just because.
It's marketing.
It is.
It's total marketing stunt for Tesla. And the funny thing is he's like, oh, it's the first car, blah blah. We put a car on the moon.
I know. I was going to say.
It's still there,
too, by the way. This one, I just read
that
a report.
That was in 1969.
Yeah, I read a report today that because this is outside the Van Vuren belt, which is what protects us from cosmic radiation, they're like, everything plastic on that car, which is basically the entire thing, is literally going to deteriorate within years. Because he was like, oh, it's going to be around the solar system for billions of years. They're like,
yeah, maybe a lithium ion battery floating like a cube.
Yeah, it's going to deteriorate in like 2 years.
If it's set to orbit the sun with ultraviolet rays and sun flares, that thing is just
toast.
Well,
originally it was sent to orbit Mars. They were going to send it so it'd just be floating around Mars. Yeah, no, that was the whole point of it. But the trajectory was off, and now it's just going to go into the asteroid belt.
Okay.
So it's going to get pelted, and it missed its target.
Toast. It's toast. Yeah.
But that is funny. This guy said you can see it from Mars because literally we have a Tesla in space.
What he should have done is try to actually get it to land on Mars and drive around.
Well, I think it would have burned up in the atmosphere.
I don't know if Mars has much of an atmosphere.
It does.
I don't know if anything's burning up on the way in, is it?
Yeah, that's why they have to use all the retro rockets and stuff when they send down probes.
Well, I heard that the two side pods landed gracefully.
Yes.
Did
you watch the video?
But the middle one was supposed to land on a barge.
Yeah.
It hit the barge at like 300 miles an hour. Yes, I'm just waiting for that video footage.
Bullshit.
There's 100% footage of that barge.
They've been really
good
about releasing all their footage, regardless of if it's terrible. If you go out on YouTube, it's all tongue in cheek. They make
There's
fun
no
of themselves.
Video. Come on.
Saying,
you could go outside, take your clothes off, and start running in circles, and someone's got that shit on film immediately. You're telling me there's no film of a rocket blasting into a barge?
The reason I believe them.
300 miles an hour? Come on.
The reason I believe them is you can Google on Tesla's own YouTube. Or not Tesla.
I know
SpaceX
they got a
YouTube.
Thing of all
it was
the fuck
like
ups.
How not to land a rocket, and like so they do it tongue in cheek to kind of make fun of themselves.
Yeah, but this one was different. This one was something that they were really. Yeah,
maybe
you know,
you're right. They claimed that the rocket or the video camera on the rocket broke loose or something because of the speed and it did have to re-enter the atmosphere and burn up.
Right.
So I believe them that there could have been technical difficulties.
So in this article, the guy also talks, and you know, I really think that this article was kind of bullshit.
So this is back to the Tesla Model 3.
Mr. Monroe. He starts complaining that, okay, this does actually kind of bother me a little bit. But the way that the guy kind of started like jacking off about it, kind of jerking off about it or talking about it. Whatever.
What are you trying to say?
I don't know. So the guy, the door locks to get out are electric. You hit a little button.
I did.
And it opens.
Not even the lock, the handle itself. There is no door handle
inside.
There
is a mechanical door handle,
okay,
but it's hidden.
And I read it wrong.
It's hidden. It's hidden like in the armrest or something.
Oh, interesting.
So you can still get out, but there isn't one in the back.
Right, that's what I'm talking about. There's no
door
handle
in the
back door.
So the guy's
door.
Like, in an emergency, are you telling me I need to fold down the rear seats and climb out the trunk? I'm like, no, you just climb in the front seat and go out that way. But there should be door handles
in the back. I agree,
there
should be. There's no reason not to have a manual door handle. No point in history did I sit in a car and I was like, this takes way too much effort to pull a door handle open. It's the same thing. What were we talking about the other week? Oh, well, like, for instance, the electric parking brake now, where you can't pull up your own parking brake and you have to hit the button. Or there's so many other things that are electric
for
the sake
of being
electric.
About the parking brake, though, is if that's just an electric solenoid that's activating a caliper in the rear, I'd almost rather have that than the stupid cables that rust and break and are the worst nightmare ever to replace.
Yeah.
So maybe for maintenance... That one's okay.
That. Let's be honest.
Are you serious? Have you ever changed parking brake cables?
I've adjusted them.
Have you ever had to do them over again on a rusty car from the Midwest?
I have. I know
it's
what you're
the worst.
I know what it you're sucks. Getting at. But how much do you think that solenoid or like these stupid switches that open your doors cost versus I don't know.
I know what you're saying. I think it would be easier to change.
That you can count on a bit more than just electronics that are bound to go bad.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I just know that changing cables is the worst.
I'll agree with
you
there.
It's bad. It's really, really bad.
So, yeah, the quality of apparently the Model 3 is bad. And we've been hearing that before. That's nothing new. But I agree that this, you know, this whole testing seems... he just kind of had it out for it, the Tesla.
Yeah, he did. The guy, like, he really had it out for it. And I didn't, and that was sad to see because I don't really, I'm not into it. But there was some, when he went around, there was some real panel gap issues.
Oh, yeah.
And some of this stuff was like, oh, well, yeah. I mean, that's not.
The quote was, you know, it's like a Hyundai or a Kia from the mid-90s.
Yeah, he said it was like a Kia from the 90s. And I'm like, all right. No, it's not.
No, it's not because it's on a different, like, technological level.
Right.
But. At the same time, there was a comment, because I did read that article, and there was a comment saying, you know, notoriously, these third-party reviewing agencies, such as Consumer Reports, they seem to always have it out for the innovator or the new startup car company.
Right.
Now, whether or not that's justified, it almost seems like, well, are they getting some sort of, well, advertising kickback by, you know, saying that the existing big three Detroit are good?
Right.
Who knows what else is going on in the background? But it sounds like it's nothing new that they really take critical opinions of new car companies.
Right. Well, before we get too much farther, I want to just have one of our sponsors on. And it's really important that we have these guys that keep us going. And they're here, what makes it, you know, free for you guys to listen to. So we'll be right back.
Luther Westside Volkswagen is the number one Volkswagen dealership in the country. They have the best selection of European cars in the Twin Cities. They have a unique inventory for all your needs. They also have a brand new facility that you should come check out today. They have friendly sales staff that are comprised of true enthusiasts who support the local scene. They're into autocrossing, SCCA. They're great guys that'll work with you on finding your next car. You can find them at westsidevw.com.
All right, I want to lead off this segment with a submission that we got from our from one of our listeners, Tom. And it ties into an article that we were going to discuss anyway, so
yeah,
I'll just go for it. Says, I'm a listener over here in the UK, and I've been listening to your podcast since before Christmas. I'm a big fan of the show. In fact, I've been aware of your stuff for much longer as a longtime VW driver, going back as far as the VW Vortex days, so I'm aware of a lot of your cars and have rocked a Your Work sticker on a few of my own over the years. Anyway, I linked a piece to you on Facebook earlier in the week about a 911 Targa that had been converted to an electronic vehicle, and I thought you might be interested in a different perspective on the EV transition from the UK. Now, I will post this video on our social media, and you can go find it there. But what it is it's basically it's an old 911,
yep.
Just a Targa, and they had converted it over to electric. And it bugs the shit out of me.
Well, it bugged me too. And what I didn't like about it is in the video, they basically said, well, they used a weird word they made up. They're like, we're re-lifing this car, as if a classic vintage 911, which, let's be honest, that car was probably worth at least 50 grand.
Yeah, they're basically...
As if they're saving it from the scrap heap.
It's and I think that's what bothered me too, but also another thing that bothered me is you're not making the car better.
Right.
They made
there
it seem
so
like
many
you were
other
making...
cars you could have... You know, converted to EV.
It's not even that. It's not even any of that. It's the fact that they made the whole thing seem like they were making the car better.
Right.
And it seemed like I was watching like a dystopian future of like, this is what was because it really,
yeah.
It's probably that's the way that it's going to have to be. And you made a good point. As the guy's driving around the Super, it's just kind of drives around.
Yeah. You
he says, it's got 150 horsepower or 150 miles an hour, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, why is he shifting?
Yes. So in the video, I've totally forgot about that comment. I thought you were going to talk about the noise, how like you lose that glorious six-cylinder noise. No, so they're cutting the video and all the cool, like, you know, cinematic clips. And all of a sudden, it shows him shifting gears in the car. And if you know anything about electric vehicles, the whole point or one of the points is you have such a huge rev range in electric motor that you don't need to shift gears.
I think that it's almost like... They didn't want to lose just another piece of
exactly.
the entire thing.
They're trying to make it look more involving, like a driver's car.
You have to. Like, a 911 is a driver's car.
Yeah.
It is difficult to drive. It's difficult to learn. It can bite you. And
that's part of the appeal.
It's part of the enigma of it is
right.
learning how to drive it. It's the sound. I remember when I first got mine, that was one thing that just really resonated with me is when I was driving is I got in, shut the door, you've got the door sounds, but you start it up and that engine behind you,
right?
It doesn't strike me anymore because it's just normal. It's just get in, you start driving, and I don't really think about that much about where the engine is. But when you first get the car and you first start driving, it's this incredible thing that you feel like
it's
you're being pushed along, and it's behind
mm-hmm.
you, and you feel like you've got somebody behind you just, you know, like driving the car. And it's,
you know what it is, there's more drama to it.
Oh, of course, and the
right?
sounds and everything else, and you know the way that the power builds, and just like a high revving engine in general. Most of the flat sixes are higher revving than most cars. You know,
right.
6,000-7,000 RPMs isn't crazy, but when you think compared to everything else, it's pretty good,
especially of that vintage.
Yeah, and it's all of that is gone. So please tell me how you're improving the car.
Yeah.
Are you improving the car by trying to show me what's coming? Are you improving the car by leading the charge of, are you saving the car because it's not going to be able to be driven anymore?
Right.
Is that
That's
what you're
what
doing?
I
That's what, how you're improving the car? You know, if you want to just take the car and do something to it, fine. But let's not report that the car is better.
Right.
Because
and
it's
you,
not better.
You may not have noticed, but the guy that owns this car, apparently he owns a shop and this is what they do.
Right. Yeah,
so
I noticed that. This is it.
Conversions
the guy doesn't drive
classic cars.
He's like, I will not
he
drive.
He said, I'll never drive,
I'll drive
another
combustion engine.
Yep.
It's like, okay, guy, you're better than me. We get it. You know, that's
yeah.
fine. You can have your little electric 911.
I think he was trying to do that to sell the virtues of the car. Like, I'll never drive a petrol car again because it's so much better electric.
Well, he can have his Apple Watch and he can have his electric 911. And, you know, honestly, it seemed like it was from the future. And it is.
Yeah.
But why do we have to go there now? We don't have to do that yet. We don't have to cut off our arm yet. Why don't we just enjoy things the way that they are? We're, like I said a couple episodes ago, we're in the golden era of motoring. We can see where the decline is going to be, and it's that shit. But we don't need to do it now.
Yeah, you know, I do totally agree that the whole conversion of something like a 911, it doesn't make any sense. You're not getting any benefit out of doing that. Because I get the benefit of like some super efficient technological vehicle, even a Tesla, if it in theory had better fit and finish and quality, you know, that serves a purpose. The converting That's a 911, well, I mean, it's a good appliance car to get you from A to B with all the technology. And regardless, people buy that car for a reason.
Right.
There's reason people want that car.
But there's, I mean, this guy is obviously has a business model. I mean, he's making these cars.
Yeah.
That could not have been a cheap conversion.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Getting that to operate well and operate correctly. But yeah. I just don't.
Especially
just,
with that magic shifter that does something.
That you didn't know damn well the batteries are in the front.
True. Yeah. So, imagine how heavy that thing is, Chris.
Well, it's obviously still pretty quick. But my question is, if the batteries are the front, I mean, how are the driving dynamics of the car anymore? What are we driving?
It's got to be just like a front engine car at that point, because all your weight's up there.
So what's the point? Except to show it's an exercise.
Exactly.
It's an exercise of showing what is possible.
Yeah.
But I don't fucking care, because I don't want to be there yet. I don't want to. Why would I want to all of a sudden like accelerate my hobby to a point where I'm already? If I'm at that point, we're at that point where we're driving around electric 911s, I'm already looking back going, wow, I really miss when I could have had that. At least I have the electric version. At least I have that. But I really miss having the motorized version. So why are we trying to rush this? Why are we trying to get this over with?
Like
it's like they're trying to rip the Band-Aid off really fast. And we're trying to like...
No, because these people don't see it as a negative. You think that guy thinks he's ripping off the Band-Aid? No, he thinks this is amazing. He thinks he's
wrong.
The vehicle. I agree with you, but your point of view...
My facts?
Your statement that he's trying to rip off the Band-Aid and, speed up the inevitable.
Okay,
he doesn't think it's
so let's say
bad.
He's the nurse ripping the Band-Aid off for you, thinking he knows that it's better to do it this way, and you're the guy being like, yeah, please don't rip it off, I don't want to rip it off, it's fine just where it is, and then they come in and rip the fucking Band-Aid off. We don't need to do that yet. We don't need to accelerate.
I was thinking kind of a tangent to this is, you know, 10, 20 years ago, there were people that did like electric conversions in their older Volkswagen Bugs and stuff.
Yep.
And that was cool because it was such a novelty.
And they were
doing
the Volts Rabbit.
That's right. That was
actually Volkswagen Rabbit or whatever.
I don't remember if that was an OEM or it was like a company in.
Like, there's a company doing it.
Yeah, it was a third party in Germany.
And I don't really care.
No, but my point is, at that point, that was cool because it was a novelty. Right?
It's how it's presented. That's my problem. 911s are not rare. Okay,
well, not only that. My point is, electric vehicles aren't rare today. There's no reason you need to do that. That's not novel anymore.
That car is not rare.
Buy a Tesla.
He's not ruining it.
Go buy a Chevy Volt.
I don't give a shit that he did that to that car. I'm not lamenting the fact that there's one less 911 Targa driving around the hillsides of wherever the fuck the guy's from. Okay, England. He's in England somewhere. I don't care. That doesn't bother me. There's thousands of these 911s out there. I mean, obviously, if we would have chosen an RSR or something and electrified that, it'd be a different story.
Right.
But it's what how he presented it.
No,
like
I
he's
agree.
Like he's the savior of motoring enthusiasm, versus being the Undertaker coming to get you before you're even dead. That's what he is. All right. Let's
dramatic
on that
both fronts. So at any rate, we're getting back.
All right.
Was the letter from Tom. So he kind of tuned us into that electric 911. But he continues with his letter here to bring up an interesting perspective.
So he says, over here, the government is pushing plug-in hybrids and EVs hard, offering free home charging devices and tax incentives for private and company electric vehicles. The government here has pledged that there will be no combustion engine vehicles on sale in the UK by 2040. And this seems to be the industry standard. This is what a lot of
we've heard this before.
The country standard, 2040. I keep hearing that number.
Well, we so heard, I think, yeah, that lawmaker in California said they want to enact that
and,
for
Russia and China and a few other places.
Exactly.
Having actively pushed consumers towards lower carbon efficient diesel engine vehicles for the last 10 years, they have made a U-turn and are now looking to introduce a diesel scrappage scheme as the new evil diesel particulates rather than just carbon emissions. The statistics show a sharp increase in the numbers of EVs and hybrids sold in the UK in the last couple of years, and this shows signs of accelerating further. And we talked about this not too long ago with Porsche being 75 to 80% hybrid in Europe.
Right. Yeah, so that's obviously increasing. The one thing I don't think we can gloss over, and we haven't fact-checked this, but I'll take Tom's word for it, the fact that they're enacting this diesel scrapping scheme, or even the fact that they're considering it, if that's the case.
Well, they already scrapped hundreds of thousands of them here.
True. Well, that's with the whole Volkswagen thing. But he's basically talking about a program like us in the U.S. would know as Cash for Clunkers.
Right.
Where you brought in your vehicle.
It was awful.
It was awful because you had all these, you know, nicer classic cars that people didn't.
But they don't care, man.
I know.
They don't care. They don't care about the heritage of it. It's evil, dude.
It was bad.
These cars are evil. They're polluting. They're supposed to be a tool, an appliance to get you somewhere. They don't care about the culture and heritage of motoring. There's right. a lot of people that do, and I think most people, even if you're not a car guy, would go, yes, motoring is a part of our history and culture. These guys don't care.
I know.
They don't give a shit, and it's right. time to stop thinking that they do.
Well,
they
don't think anyone
care.
Pretends they care, the lawmakers that are, you know, in the EPA.
All right, so this is possibly a little off topic for the Car Focus podcast, and I don't think it is. I think
no,
it's
this
really
was,
relevant.
This was
is
interesting.
Why I, this is why I wanted to read it. But there's an interesting angle to this that a few people seem to consider. There is no denying that the motor industry is pushing forward at a rapid rate, innovating and bringing forward new technology to extend the range and drivability of EVs. An area few consider fully is how these vehicles will be charged. Now, he's talking about the infrastructure here.
Exactly.
The age, especially, I mean, the infrastructure there, or maybe even, maybe it's comparable to Eastern United States. It can't be good.
Right. Well, read ahead because he does go over the specifics here.
Yep. Currently, the main objection people have to an EV's adoption is a lack of range. This is improving, but with more range comes an increased need for charging. Some people have provision for home charging. Others without off-street parking do not and will rely on EV, quote, filling stations at supermarkets and such to charge their cars. Can you imagine being like, oh, shit, I need to charge my car, so I guess I'll just go grocery shopping?
Well, and even that, you're not going to be able to charge it that quickly. So, yeah, his point is if everyone who has a car in the UK right now had an electric car, you're not going to be able to sustain how you're going to charge these things. Not everyone has a garage over there, especially, so you're not going to be able to bring it into your garage and plug it in. And even if you could, I don't know if you already read this, this is coming up later, but you can't sustain the
right.
network. Well, so I'll let you continue.
So 75% charge a 90 kilowatt hour Tesla Model S using a home charging point, 3,500 kilowatts. And I'm assuming that that's the output of the home charging point is 3,500 kilowatts.
I believe
this
so.
This takes approximately 90 hours. Charging use a Tesla supercharger, 50,000 kilowatts.
Yep, that is
takes 1 hour and 20 minutes. It is not possible to install a 50 kilowatt charger at someone's home as the cables to feed the electricity up to the street are not rated highly enough to cope with that level of load, volts, amperage, etc.
Mm-hmm.
The electrical load associated with 20 Tesla superchargers is roughly equivalent to that of a supermarket. So basically what he's saying, and he's completely right, is that the infrastructure we have, we have till 2040 to rebuild the entire power grid of the entire world,
right.
or the modern Western world, that's, you guess, okay, I'll just continue.
Keep going and we can comment on it.
Some of the electrical network operators over here are starting to panic. Projections suggest that to support the transition to EVs in this country at the rate currently projected, assuming the cars get no more hungry, will cost between $6 billion and $16 billion, which is $10 to $20 million or something like that. An electricity network reinforcement by 2050. This will require replacement of hundreds of substations and digging hundreds of miles of cable. Imagine that's transfers to thousands of substations and thousands and hundreds of thousands of miles in the United States up to reinforce the network across the country. Now, one thing that they do have going for them over there, in my opinion, is that it's a really condensed population center.
Right.
Whereas here, there's a lot of urban sprawl.
Well, not only that, they have just the culture is different in the fact that they have public transit and people use public transit more. I think there's just
that's
less people use cars over there than they do here.
That was going to be my point, is that what you're going to see is people are just not going to be able to own a car.
True.
Because you're not going to have anywhere to charge it. So you're going to be forced onto public transportation in the form of autonomous transportation vehicles.
Right. And, well, why don't you finish his letter here and then we'll...
This would take a significant amount of time, cause terrible disruption, and the cost of this would all have to be passed to the consumer, along with the lost tax revenue from fuel duty as people stop using petrol and diesel cars. That's going to be made into a road tax by how many miles you drive.
And he mentions that here.
This cost would be... I should get ahead of myself then. This cost would either be added to the energy bill, which is a huge contentious issue, road tax, charging tolls, pence cost per mile, or general taxation. None of these are going to win any votes from anybody. I agree with you that this is the direction of travel, but the hurdles of cost, infrastructure, and convenience are larger than people think, and certainly in this country will seriously slow down the transition to EVs. I think I'll just finish. I, for one, will be sticking to my daily 150,000-mile Mark IV Golf TDI. A lot of life left on that thing, only 150,000 miles, until it inevitably inhales its own turbo. Hope this wasn't too dull, but keep up the good work. No, it wasn't too dull. I really liked it, and I'm glad that he wrote it. And I do think he's a little bit misguided. It's very, very good, and I agree with 99%. But I think that he underestimates the motivation of bureaucrats and like the EPA and stuff like that to get this stuff done.
Right.
The using tax dollars to do, what do you think they would rather build? A wall on the border of Mexico? Or would they rather do the entire electronics or the wiring substructure of Washington, D.C.? Obviously, this is going to be something that...
They're going to say it builds jobs, everything builds else. Jobs. So, yeah, they're going to be able to sell
it. It's a shovel-ready job. And
it's
not going to take.
But, yeah, the bigger...
They don't care that... He's like, it'll be hugely disruptive. They don't care. They don't care.
Maybe
it's a means to an end.
Climate is different over there, you know.
Maybe.
But it is a good point that, you know, I don't know if the lawmakers who just picked this number of 2040 out of the sky are thinking of all these other infrastructure projects.
Of course not. We had a discussion off the air about what it would take to regulate a fucking pencil.
Yes,
right? I mean, it's an old adage of what it takes to regulate to make a pencil.
Yep. Don't think of all the other
the cotton pants that the lumberjacks wear, the oil for the chainsaws, the chains, the vehicles
effect,
to get
basically.
There. You have no concept of what it's going to take to do any of this. So 2040 is, you know, 22 years away. That's not that long.
No, I know. But so you talked about, you know, how the climate is going to change and the fact that people will just stop buying cars then if that's the... option.
In urban areas, I think that's going to happen. As time goes on, it's going to be too much of a hassle to
own
a car.
Yep.
Especially when it's so easy. Did you go ride the stupid thing?
I didn't, because I was going to talk about that. So, yeah, we mentioned before, while the Super Bowl was here, they were testing this autonomous shuttle bus. However, I called, and they were done with public testing. They only tested it 3 days for a four-hour window where you could go and ride it.
Okay.
So
it wasn't like an all-weekend thing or
no,
something.
It wasn't. But I have a call-in with the Minnesota DOT to get a personal review done. So
that'd be great.
We can see if that'll happen. I'm going to try to make that happen.
Great.
But getting back
but
to
that's going
to
be what
issue.
People will choose.
Exactly.
That's going to be it. And you don't. I don't blame anyone, really.
No.
If
but
you live
what
in
was...
Minneapolis and you're trying to go to, you know, A to B within town,
yeah, that's
how
fine.
Nice would it be to just walk out your door, get on this thing and go?
What about the other 90% of our country in particular where you can't take a bus?
You mean flyover country?
Yeah, right here.
Yeah, that's that's not what, I mean, people don't care. The politicians don't care. They don't give a shit.
Yeah, but it is interesting because even like he's saying, if you don't have, you know, off-street parking where you can make one of these Tesla chargers and put it in your garage, which A, the infrastructure currently doesn't support anyways, even if they built this whole infrastructure
out. Then what they're
going
to have to do is they're going to have to put it on the side of their house. Voters aren't going to allow people to put these cars in their driveways and force them to own these cars without giving them a way to use them. That's the only way the politicians are going to be able to float the idea is if they make it painless for the populace.
Right.
That's the only way this is ever going to work. So they're going to be like, yes, you have to drive these cars. No, you can't buy a combustion engine anymore. But it's okay. We'll subsidize it, and we'll put the power thing on the side of your house, even if you don't have a garage.
It has to be basically every parking meter has a plug-in is the way it's going to have to be.
Oh, sure.
Because if you live right downtown there, it's not like you're going to be able to get the parking spot right in front of your apartment. You know, you're thinking ideally you have your house somewhere, a cottage, where you can pull up to the curb and plug it in. No, I mean, there are people who own cars who just have an apartment downtown.
Right.
That's a huge number of people.
You know what you do is I have a friend that works for some dealerships, like the biggest dealership group in London.
Okay.
I should have him on and we can
talk about this issue.
He's got some really funny stories too.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, that would be good. Anyway, I want to move on from this.
It was a good point, and we appreciate any listener feedback.
Yeah, that was great. Thanks for saying that in. And We also have another listener input. Do you want to go ahead with that?
Yeah, this is let's see. We had a listener question, and I think it was funny because he basically wrote in saying, and I'll just read his comment here. One thing I struggle with is being happy with what I drive. I had an 08 GTI that I had almost 16 grand in mods, which were wheels, performance, etc. And he said he sold that to buy a Mercedes, thinking he'd leave it alone, and not much could be done to the Mercedes. Well, he says he just dropped $2,500. Yeah, he said he just dropped $2,500 on an exhaust. So he's saying, how does one leave stuff alone? As an enthusiast, am I just doomed by virtue of my interests? I'd like to hear your takes on some of this.
Yeah, I think you're doomed. I mean, I think it is. I mean, it's...
Well, I think that's a really pessimistic outlook.
Here's how
you do have... it. Okay, go ahead.
Here's how you do it. You have a daily driver, which I guess I didn't leave it alone either. The sport wagon's got coilovers and shit on it. But I have my truck. Buy something that you're not enthused about. You bought the Mercedes because you thought it was a cool car, right? And that's the reason you bought it in the first place. If you don't want to mod it, you need to buy a Hyundai Elantra or something, which I would still probably try to have fun with somehow. Yeah. I think it's in your blood. It's almost like an itch.
Well, I was going to say it's not a bad thing. So I would tell the listener's name is William. I mean, not to sound elitist, but you're complaining about how you have this opportunity to be able to modify your car and spend money on it, right? This isn't that bad of a thing. And don't get me wrong, I'm the same exact way. How much money do I have into the
trailer
mods
hitch
on the truck? And I got 35-inch tires on it and a lift. And then that's not to mention I had the 911. We have the RS4. So yeah, I mean, I'm the same way. I can't leave things well enough alone.
The way that a lot of people do it, though, is they have a daily driver and then they have a project.
Exactly.
And you got to buy a minivan. You'll never mod one of those.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point. It's something we all kind of struggle with. I would say
be lucky that you have a significant other that allows you to do this stuff.
And have the
means. Because I hear stories from people that are like, yeah, my wife won't let me buy wheels. I'm like, Jesus, I'm so sorry for your loss.
Right. Yeah, I know.
It's just be happy that you have
you have this problem.
So, anything else you want to talk about on the way out here?
I have a couple stories. One, I'm gonna skip over a couple just to talk about this one. Some people may have saw this come up their social media feed, and I just think it's so hilarious that I'm gonna read just kind of the intro here. When a salvage team pulled a Jeep from the bottom of a lake on Monday, it had been there for more than a week. All the owner did was lend it to a friend for a sightseeing trip in Vermont who, according to USA Today, said Google's Waze GPS app instructed them to drive off a boat launch and into Lake Champlain.
Wonderful. Yeah.
So
this reminds me of... Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say that basically this driver was so dependent on their GPS and their phone that they're staring at, they literally drove into a lake because it told them to.
Was it a black lagoon?
So it does say in the driver's, benefit of their doubt.
Was it a foggy night?
Apparently it was rainy and dark outside, along with heavy fog, poorly lit boat launch. But still, when you're driving down a boat launch...
It looks like a boat launch.
It looks like a boat launch. At least, I don't know.
I need to see a picture of the boat launch.
I had to shake my
head. But this was awesome. So I saw someone post, this is an exact scenario that happened on The Office.
Oh, yes,
he drives
did.
Into the lake, and he's like, no, it says turn right here. He's like, no, don't do it. And he drives into the lake, and they just crawl out of the car.
So I have two interesting points about this story. One is just it makes you shake your head how dependent people are on technology.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is if your autonomous car was using GPS and just looking at, road parameters,
yeah, that's a good
it
point.
Would have driven right into that lake as well.
Maybe its sensors would have been like, water?
Water, no good. Big puddle ahead. Brace yourself.
I'm not sure.
So I just had to laugh at that one and kind of shake my head because people need to, I guess, pay attention. Don't have your phone just driving your life,
Yeah, kind of let's eyes up a little bit.
Exactly.
Next episode I'm going to introduce a new segment. I forgot about it this time, but
okay.
I want to start talking about some driving etiquette. So we're going to pick
a
couple
that's
things.
A really good idea.
It was one of our listeners' suggestions so we're going to pick an etiquette thing to talk about every couple of weeks or something like that. So we're going to bring that.
Yeah, people should maybe we'll post something online so you can submit questions, or do you already have something?
I have.
Have set to go?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I have plenty. I have plenty of problems that I can talk about. On that note, thanks for joining us, guys. Head over to your, whatever you listen to the podcast on. Please leave us a 5-star review, especially on iTunes, Google Play, everything like that. Thanks, Jake, for being here. It's good to be back, and I missed you.
Oh, I missed you too, Chris. Thanks.
It's nice to be back.
Make sure you tell a friend too, because that's how this thing grows and we keep it on the air.
Yeah, we enjoy really doing that. And it's been great. You know, I'm not going to talk numbers because it seems stupid, but it's been growing every week.
It has.
And that makes me really, really excited.
Really excited. It's because of you guys.
Yep.
So thank you. And we'll talk to you next week.
Take care. Bye bye.
Please don't rip it off. I don't want to rip it off. It's fine just where it is.